Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening here in Colorado. I guess afternoon over there in Hawaii with Rabbi Benny. I noticed that Lynn has posted in the room a message from Cheryl Valentine, which says, "Back to the emergency room tonight. Hold me in the light and love. Much love to you." And I'm sure, as everyone in the room knows, Cheryl has been diagnosed with brain cancer. It's been about 2 weeks now, a little over 2 weeks since that diagnosis. She told me that they told her it is stage 4 cancer. I would love to take a moment to be silent for Cheryl. Before I do that, though, I want to share a little with you from NTI. NTI Philippians chapter 1, it talks about, if someone should ask us, will you pray for me? It talks about what that statement really means, and when we say yes, what we are saying. So this is what NTI Philippians chapter 1 says. "I pray for you" means, "I know who you are, I know who I am, and I know what we are together." So what that says to me is that when I take this moment to be still for Cheryl, to pray for Cheryl, I'm not really focusing on a person who has brain cancer, not in my stillness. I am going to be focusing on the unaffected Cheryl, on the unaffected I am. That is Cheryl, that is what I am, that is what we are. The next sentence says, "I pray for you" means, "I know we are not separate, but connected through God, which is mind and spirit." So when I am being still, focusing on the I am that we are, that is not something that I'm doing separate from her, me here in Colorado and her there in California at the emergency room. In that moment of being still as I am, I am fully one with her. There's a connection there. The mind may not be able to perceive that connection, but it is absolutely, absolutely present. The next sentence says, "I pray for you" means, "I recognize our oneness, and I recognize as I ask for you, I too shall receive." So again, when I close my eyes and I'm being still for Cheryl, whatever is with me in that stillness is not only a gift that I give to Cheryl, but it is a gift that I give to myself. So if I was to focus on Cheryl as a temporal being, whose life may be threatened, and I'm praying for some kind of an extension of her life, the gift that I am giving to both her and me is a continuation of the belief that we are these temporal beings, that we are these temporary persons. And that isn't really the gift I want to give. I want to give the gift of realization of our truth, the realization of the I am, realization of the eternal life that we are. So when I close my eyes for Cheryl, I will be focusing on that for both her and me. Again, I will be focusing on the unaffected, that which is not touched by brain cancer, that which is the reality of Cheryl and the reality of me and the reality of all of us. The next sentence says, "I pray for you" is a statement of faith that all you see and sense and experience is not all there is. It is a statement of realization that effect is the result of intent, and intent can be affected by you. This is not a statement that's saying, that the intent to heal brain cancer will be affected by me closing my eyes and focusing on that. What NTI is really talking about, again, is realization. If the intent is there to realize truth, truth will be realized. Because illusion is only held up through the desire to experience ourselves in that way. And so if we have the intent to let go of that experience and to realize ourselves, then that intent will be brought into experience. So again, when I close my eyes, which we're going to do in just a moment, and I do it as a gift to Cheryl, I realize that it's also a gift to me and a gift to all of us, because there is no separation. And I will spend my time focusing on the unaffected. So why don't we go ahead now and take a moment of silence for our dear sister Cheryl. Amen. All right, so thank you everyone who chose to join me in that. Thank you very much for joining with me. Tonight I start a new series. This came as guidance during my teaching the last time I taught on Sunday night. Tonight I'm going to begin teaching the teachings of Inner Ramana. I have not taught this book since the year that it came, which was 2009. And again, last week when I was teaching, or it was actually 2 weeks ago, when I was teaching from the Bhagavad Gita, the path of action and the path of devotion, I realized those are the same as the teachings in Inner Ramana. And that's when I spontaneously felt that it was time for me to teach Inner Ramana again. It was after that decision that someone wrote to me and said they had just bought the teachings of Inner Ramana. And there's a sentence in here, in either the introduction or the closing, that says all of Inner Ramana is taught by me and archived on my website. And she said, I can't find that anywhere. And of course she couldn't find it, because it was deleted when the hacker came a couple months ago and everything was lost. But I realized, oh, great, because I've just said that I'm going to go ahead and teach this again so I can record it, and then I can archive it on my website, reginadonacres.com, and then it will be there. So in the future, if people go and they buy this book and they see that sentence and they go to Regina Don Acres, they'll be able to find it. So I will be archiving all of these teachings from the beginning to the end on reginadonacres.com under the audio menu. Tonight, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the very first message, the commentary on mind. This is the message that came on February 12th, 2009. If you know the story of that day, I had bought a book by Ramana Maharshi, because when I asked Holy Spirit for something to take me to the next step, a guidance came to go and buy a book from Ramana Maharshi, so I did that. But when the book came, I had never read Ramana Maharshi or any other teacher from India before. And he used lots of words, Hindu words. I did not know what they meant. And I just found it too difficult to understand. And I threw the book down and I did not read it. But there was a picture of him on the cover. And on February 12th, 2009, while I was sitting in contemplation near where I had thrown that book, the picture on the cover began to vibrate, and it actually began to kind of come out of the book in like a 3D fashion and then go back into the book, come out in like a 3D fashion and go back in. And the funny thing is, I'm not sure why now, but for some reason then I tried to ignore it. Like I saw this as a distraction. Again, I was not at all attracted to Ramana Maharshi or that book. But as this continued, I heard in my mind, Holy Spirit, which I did trust, I heard Holy Spirit say, ask him what he wants to say to you. So I grabbed my notebook and I asked Ramana Maharshi what he wanted to say to me. And this message, the commentary on mind, came immediately and easily. And over the next several weeks, all of the messages in this book came. So we'll just begin at the beginning and we'll go all the way through the book as many Sunday nights as it takes. By the way, if you don't have the book and you do want it, you can get the best price on it from my website, reginadonakers.com. And then just go to my bookstore there and order it from me. And that's the best price you can get, and I'll ship it out to you. All right, so here we go. Commentary on mind. The mind is not constant. The concerns for the mind for one day may be completely different than the concerns for another. If all of the concerns for one day are written down, it may be seen that concerns and imagined solutions conflict with one another, so that no true peace can be found with the mind. The solution of concerns creates new concerns. And so again, there is no peace with the mind. And actually, I think the joke's on me. Because if any of you all were here this morning for our first Awakening Together gathering, you know that this was the teaching that came from the reading that Barbara did from Nisargadatta, that there is no peace with the mind. And then it was the teaching that spontaneously came through me that was inspired by that reading. And so here now we have Ramana Maharshi saying the exact same thing. There is no peace with the mind. So Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramana Maharshi are extremely consistent in saying this. But what's interesting about this first paragraph is Ramana Maharshi is not at all interested, or I should really call this the inner Ramana. The inner Ramana is not at all interested in intellectual learning. And you will see that as we get further into this book. Inner Ramana is interested in actual realization. So what's interesting about this first paragraph is that inner Ramana is actually giving us kind of some exercises that we can try. Trying it for even 1 week should be sufficient. And for me, the way that I would try this exercise would be through journaling. I might, you know, in the morning time or in the afternoon or evening, it doesn't really matter, journal all of the current worries that are on my mind. What is it that I'm worried about today? What am I thinking about today? What am I trying to figure out today? Just write them down. And then I might even write down, well, what are some of the ways that I'm thinking about solving this problem? What's one possible solution? What's another possible solution? And just for a week, kind of keep a journal of writing down what today's concerns are, what all the possible solutions are. And then after about a week of journaling, go back and look and notice how, you know, what I was really concerned about one day, what was most important on my mind one day, may not even been there by the end of the week. By then, a new problem, a new concern had popped up. I could look at the potential solutions for my concerns and notice that, but if I implemented that solution, well, then here's another problem that's going to come out of that. And if I really take the time to write down, literally just write down everything that's in my mind and then go back and look at it, I'm going to see for myself how the mind is constantly changing. I'm really going to come to see all of that thinking that I used to think of as my good judgment, my good practice of looking at problems from all different solutions, from all different directions. I'm going to come to see that it's really just chatter. It's a whole lot of chatter. And every single day, the mind has something new to chatter about, and as much as I listen to it, it's going to chatter more. But Ramana Maharshi, or Inner Ramana, does not want us to take this as his word for it. He wants us to really look and notice. Notice the mind. Notice how it's constantly chattering. It's constantly got problems. It's constantly got solutions. Then it's got new problems. Then it's got different problems. And see that. And see that really the core of what it's doing, its true purpose, is just to keep talking so that we listen to it. It really just wants our constant attention. That's what it's after. So again, the first paragraph of the Commentary on Mind said, there is no peace with the mind. So beginning with the second paragraph. This is why one must step away from the mind to find peace. Peace cannot be found with the mind. And again, we saw Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj telling us the same thing this morning when he was speaking with that questioner in the reading that Barbara shared this morning. Stepping away from the mind is as simple as losing interest in it. When the mind chatters, it chatters because you are listening. As you lose interest in what it has to say, because you know its answers are not your answers, the chattering of mind shall fade away. So, that's a very, very interesting paragraph, because that paragraph, again, is telling us that the only reason the mind talks is to get our attention, is because we listen. And in fact, it is our listening that feeds it. You know, if you think of the mind as a windmill, our listening, our attention is the wind that makes that windmill go and go and go. And of course, you know what happens to a windmill when there's no wind. It stops. It becomes still. And so what Ramana Maharshi is saying is if we lose interest, and this is a very natural, it's a very natural action, losing interest. It's not a forcing. We're not trying to force the mind to be quiet because, first of all, that's not going to happen. And second of all, when we're trying to force the mind to be quiet, we're really giving it an awful lot of attention. And remember, attention is what feeds the mind. So we're being asked to lose interest in the mind. And this morning in the gathering, I talked about how we all know how to do that. All of us have been in the room when there's a TV commercial on that we have absolutely no interest in. And that TV commercial can be loud. It can have lots of bright colors and lots of movement. And we still pay no attention to the commercial. We pay no attention because we have no interest. So that proves that the mind can be loud, it can be colorful, it can be moving, but if we have no interest in it, we won't pay attention to it. And since our attention is the wind that makes that windmill of the mind go round and round and round, when we cease to pay attention to it, it's going to begin to slow down, and at some point it actually just kind of fades. And then the I am, which was always present, but maybe not seen because we were so focused on the mind, the I am becomes apparent. And I noticed Julie has written, what are you valuing? And that's a really good question, because am I valuing these stories that the mind is telling me? Am I valuing the stories of these problems, the stories of these solutions? Or do I value my inner calling to know truth? And if I value my inner calling to know truth, then I'm going to learn to focus on the heart, focus on that desire to know truth, and I can't focus on it and the mind's chatter at the same time. So when I learn to focus on what I truly value, I automatically take my attention away from the mind, and I'm not feeding the mind. And in fact, that's a lot of what's taught in the teachings of Inner Ramana, is how to gently and lovingly bring our attention away from the mind to the heart so that we're not feeding the mind with that attention any longer. The next paragraph, mind cannot be ignored entirely. Mind is like a tool that must be used if one is to experience this world in any way. Mind is the tool of perception. Perception can only be experienced through mind. But this is not the same as saying that mind controls perception, or that one must listen to the chattering or problems and solutions of mind. So what this paragraph is saying is, you know, without mind, without the way mind perceives and even judges, I would not know the difference between this cup and this magnifying glass, you know, because it literally is a mental judgment that says this is a cup and this is for drinking, and this is a magnifying glass and this is for making the little letters bigger so that you can read them. You know, it's mind that allows me to drive a car and to notice stop at stop signs and to notice stop at red lights and go when the light turns green and not run over the bicyclist. You know, it is the mind that allows me to know language, to use words, to speak with you, to understand the words when you speak with me. So Inner Ramana is saying, you know, there is going to be some function of mind that's going to remain. So, you know, what happens with us, and I think we've probably all experienced this to one degree or another, is when we start learning practices that are meant to be truly helpful, like the practices in the teachings of Inner Ramana, the mind gets involved and it adds an interpretation which exaggerates the practice. So if we're being taught to lose interest in the mind, really what the teachings of Inner Ramana is asking us to do is to lose interest in the mind chatter, the stories. But then the mind itself will take that one step further and say, well, then you're not supposed to know the difference between a cup and a magnifying glass, because that's mind. You shouldn't even be looking both ways before you cross the street. You should trust, because looking both ways and making a decision for yourself about whether it's safe or not to cross, that's mind. And it takes us into a place that is not reasonable. And the reason that mind takes us into a place that's not reasonable is so that we will abandon the useful teaching. There's a purpose behind that. It's really to keep mind in place. So Inner Ramana is addressing that right up front. We're going to be asked to lose attention in the mind. But what we're being asked to lose attention in are the stories, the chatter. We are still going to use the mind to speak, to pick out a cup and fill it with a liquid and drink and drive cars and balance checkbooks. And, you know, we're going to use the mind as a tool. But there's a difference between using the mind as a tool and being totally engrossed in all of its stories. So that's a really nice distinction that's made right up front in the teachings of Inner Ramana. So moving on to the next paragraph. Think of mind as a filter. This filter enables one to see objects where there is light. This filter enables one to distinguish differences where there are none. It enables one to communicate using symbols that represent something else. Without the mind, one would be unable to experience the world. But this does not mean that one must be subject to the mind. Now, many of you have known me for a long time. And those who have known me for a long time know that in 2007, I had an experience where I was an apple. And when I was an apple, this was a time when what I am, my awareness shifted into an apple, and I literally was the apple, and then my awareness shifted back into being human, and then I understood what happened. But while I was an apple, I was not a human experiencing myself as an apple. I was an apple, which means, of course, I did not have the brain. I did not have that tool. And so I didn't, for example, know that I was an apple while I was an apple, because I didn't have the filter that would say, this is an apple and these are teeth. I didn't have that filter. So because I didn't have that filter, I did not see any difference. During the time that I was an apple, my daughter was actually eating the apple. Of course, I didn't know this while I was an apple, but my daughter was eating the apple. And when she took a bite out of me, the apple, I did not experience myself as an apple. One thing with something else, teeth coming at me, you know, that would have been probably a scary experience, but I didn't experience it that way. I experienced myself as light, and I experienced those teeth as light. And when the teeth bit into me, I experienced that as an interaction of light with light. The only thing I knew during my experience of being an apple was light. I knew, you know, again, I didn't have a mental concept of this. There were no mental thoughts, but there was still knowledge. I knew myself as light. I knew everything within me as light and everything outside of me as light. And I also knew that all light was alive. All light was aware. All light was the same. And all light was one. This was the knowledge that I had as an apple. Only when I came back to being human and I had this mind that humans have to filter everything, only then did I understand the experience. Only then did I know that I had been an apple and that there were my daughter's teeth and she bit into me. So if we did not have this mind that we have as humans, we wouldn't know what a cup was, and we wouldn't know to pour liquid in it. We wouldn't know to drink, right? So what this paragraph is saying is, in effect, there is no world, right? There is no world, but what allows you to experience a world, what allows you to have that experience of being human, is the mind. And if we take away the mind, you will no longer have this experience of being a human in a world. And so, again, the mind is going to stay, but the mind is a filter that is providing an experience because that experience was desired. And that's what the mind is. So we're going to allow the mind to remain a tool, remain that filter, allow us to continue to be human, have this human experience. But we're going to learn not to believe the mind and everything about the mind. We're going to learn to see the mind as a tool, just like if you were, do you remember, some of you guys are a little older like me, right? Do you remember, this was actually even before my time, but when I was little, they were still around and you could see them. Those little things that you would look in, they were little machines you could look in and then there'd be like a film inside there, but you had to crank it to see the film. And they were very old machines, but they still had some around when I was a kid that you could go and they'd have one at the drugstore or they'd have one at Disney World and you look in and you crank it and you could see something. Well, we knew that that was just a machine. And we knew that if we wanted to have the experience of seeing the film, we had to look in and crank it. We never, ever confused ourselves with what was happening in the film, right? Well, we want to come to see the mind as the same thing. The mind is like that machine, you know, and the mind is creating an experience and we can enjoy the experience through the machine, but we are not the machine. This is the distinction that we want to learn through the teachings of Inner Ramana. And yeah, it's our attention that turns the crank. Thank you, Jay, for bringing that in. That's exactly what it is. And, let's see. Let me see if I can. This is a kinetoscope. Is that what you're saying the machine is? A kinetoscope, I think, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. All right, so let's go on to the next paragraph. Inner Ramana says, the mind, when believed and taken seriously, seems to define reality. But as I have just shown, the mind does not define reality. It places a veil of perception over reality, so reality can be experienced in a new way. This means that the mind is a trickster or illusionist, and that which it creates is purely illusion. To believe the mind is to believe illusion. To think illusion is reality is to be completely deluded. So again, the mind is the machine that we made so that we could experience form, so that we could experience ourselves as human. You know, it's just like this kinetoscope, kinetoscope, right? And Inner Ramana is not saying there's anything wrong with that. Inner Ramana is not saying there's anything wrong with the fact that the mind creates illusion. Just like there's nothing wrong with watching a film in a kinetoscope, right? But to believe that you are that illusion, that's when you become deluded. So if I look into a kinetoscope and I see some lady running from the villain who wants to tie her down to the railroad tracks and I start thinking I'm that lady, that's deluded, right? So it's not the actual illusion that is a problem. It's the believing the illusion to be my reality. That's the problem, forgetting who I am. Inner Ramana continues. Again, I emphasize that belief in illusion or the process of being deluded comes from believing the mind. So he's emphasizing for us that the mind itself is not a problem. The fact that the mind makes illusion is not a problem. The problem is forgetting that it's illusion. The problem is believing it's real and that I'm the character and that I am very threatened by whatever the current story is. That's where the problem comes in, is the belief. Inner Ramana continues, this must mean, then, that the process of awakening is also the process of learning not to believe the stories of the mind. So if belief is the actual problem, then learning not to believe is the answer. As a filter, the mind can be used to see and experience illusion without believing it. This experience comes from maintaining knowledge that is beyond the mind. It can also be said that this knowledge is before the mind. It can also be said, oh, no, I'm reading the same sentence again. I just will. It can also be said that this knowledge is before the mind. This knowledge exists now within the self at a depth that is below and at a height that is above the mind. In other words, the knowledge is always accessible and it takes only desire to remember and realize this knowledge. Another way that the mind has us fooled is that we tend to think the mind is our intelligence. If I have a problem, I start thinking about that problem. I start thinking about what solutions might work, and I think I'm being wise. And in fact, I'll tell you that I've been doing that lately, and I've caught myself just now, so I will give it up. I'll give it up immediately. But let me just tell you the error that I've been making, because it seems like good sense. And the error that I've been making is Danielle has been living with us for the last few years, and she pays me a certain amount of rent to live here. I also get a salary from the Foundation for the Holy Spirit, which is now Awakening Together. And if you put the salary plus the rent that Danielle gives me together, there is enough money. You know, I make it. I'm not rich, but I make it every month. Basically, the salary almost, maybe not quite, but almost covers my basic expenses. But then there's always things that are a little different. Like last month, we went to the dentist. You know, we don't do that every month. And the rent that Danielle has been paying has been that extra money for those other things that just come up randomly, but something always comes up, right? Car insurance has to be paid. You know, something breaks and has to be fixed. Well, Danielle is moving out in a couple of months. Her parents are moving here to Pueblo West, and we're very, very happy about that. And she's moving in with them. And my mind has been saying, oh, but that money, without that money, there's going to be a problem. I'm not going to be able to make ends meet. Now, I haven't felt fear in my chest. That doesn't mean there wasn't fear behind the thought, but I haven't felt fear like I used to with financial situations. There was a knowing that somehow everything was going to be okay, but at the same time, the mind has been thinking. What I told Danielle yesterday is maybe I'll get a job as a waitress. Maybe I can be a breakfast waitress in a diner and go to work a few hours, and then come home and do my regular job with Awakening together. But that's thinking. And you see, we think that kind of thinking is our intelligence, is our wisdom. But that is not true. What the teachings of Inner Ramana is telling me here is that my wisdom is above the mind, below the mind, before the mind, after the mind. That's my wisdom. And notice how it's describing every position except the mind. Before the mind would not be the mind. Above the mind would not be the mind. Below the mind would not be the mind. Beyond the mind would not be the mind. These are the words that Inner Ramana is using. So Inner Ramana is saying my knowledge, my wisdom, is clearly not the mind. And the only thing that's blocking me from knowing my knowledge, my wisdom, is believing that my mind is. So those stories that we listen to that tell us, maybe I can go get a job as a waitress. Those are the stories that we need to learn not to listen to. Hello, Jamie. And so the next thing that Inner Ramana says is, I ask you to practice. I have given you a mantra. And just in the history of this story, I was given the mantra, I am that I am, approximately 9 months before I started knowingly hearing Inner Ramana. In the spring prior to hearing Inner Ramana, a message came in giving me this mantra, I am that I am. And there was also another message that came talking about surrender, that later, when I went back and looked at those two messages that came months before, I realized those were predecessors to the teachings of Inner Ramana. So by the time this message came, I had actually been using the mantra, I am that I am, for 9 months. So that's why he says, I have given you a mantra. It had already been with me for a long time. I have given you a mantra, I am that I am. I ask you to practice this mantra to the utmost of your ability. This means practice it as much as you remember. This mantra shall access knowledge and bring it back to you, similar to the way a computer command can access a saved file and open it into memory. So a couple of things that are really interesting about this paragraph. One is that Inner Ramana is asking me to use the mantra to the utmost of my ability, right? But mind will grab on to a statement like that, use it to the utmost of your ability, and it will start judging every time, every time you went an hour or 2 hours without remembering to say the mantra, right? So Inner Ramana, in order to help us not judge with the mind in that way, Inner Ramana defines utmost of your ability for us. And Inner Ramana says that means practice it as much as you remember to practice it. So if I went 2 hours without remembering to say the mantra, that was outside of my utmost ability. There's nothing to judge. But if it comes into my mind while I'm driving down the street to say the mantra, then I say it, I am that I am. If for some reason I choose not to say it, like if I listen to a thought that says, oh, I don't want to say it right now, then I'm not, maybe not doing to the utmost of my ability, right? So it's just a practice. When the thought comes into the mind to say the mantra to yourself, then say it. That's the best you can do. You can say it when you remember to say it. You can't say it when you don't remember, right? So when you remember, say it. And that's all that you need to do. And if you say this mantra to yourself every time you remember, what's happening is something is going on, you know, you could say inside of you. There's a miracle process that's happening. It is not using the mind. It's going beyond the mind, and it's accessing that knowledge that is not a part of the mind, that knowledge that is before mind, beyond mind, above mind, below mind. And it's bringing that knowledge into your consciousness. Just like opening a file from a hard disk and bringing it into the memory of your computer so you can see it. So you're using I am that I am to take a message that is not conscious. It's like a closed file on the computer. It's not up in memory. And you're bringing it into memory. My personal experience with the mantra I am that I am, after saying it for 2 months, I started to notice a change. And the change that I noticed was certain things that had always annoyed me, upset me, that I had always judged. You know, you could say I naturally judged them. They were a part of this personality to judge them. That just stopped. Certain things that used to annoy me, I just was not annoyed. Things that I used to judge, I just was not judging. And there was not a thought, which is why it's knowledge beyond mind. There was not the thought that I am safe. But there somehow was a knowing that I am safe. And it was that knowing that was causing these other things to disappear. You know, when you get annoyed with someone making noise while you're trying to meditate, you're not necessarily conscious of the fact that really you think you're threatened. That's why you're annoyed. Something is being threatened. And when you start having this non-thought knowledge that you're safe, people can make noise while you're trying to meditate, and it no longer annoys you. So this realizing that I'm safe changes a lot of things, right? It changes a lot of things. And that's the first experience that I had with the mantra, I am that I am, was just that I'm safe feeling came up. I mentioned to you all that I had thoughts, you know, just recently that maybe I'll try and get a job, you know, working just a breakfast shift, just enough to bring in a little extra money once Danielle moves out. As far as I know now, I won't follow through with that plan. But if I had followed through with that plan, and if I had gone and applied for a job in a couple of places and then saw that it just wasn't working, I know, even though I had the idea and I followed the idea up to some degree, if it wasn't unfolding easily, I would have been able to easily drop it. And I would have been able to say that must have just been my idea, you know, because the universe isn't assisting. So I'm just going to let go of that. And I would have been able to let go of that without fear. And the reason for that is because of this I am safe. This I am safe has come into place. It obviously has not cut off the mind. The mind still thinks, or I couldn't even have the idea that I need to get a job as a waitress, right? But that's why there's not a fear, or there's not a panic, or I don't experience myself as worrying, because what's there is the I am safe. So it's like both are present. The mind is there telling its stories, and the I am safe knowledge is here. And what the I am safe knowledge allows me to do is when I notice that I was listening to a mind story, it allows me to drop it immediately. Where before, even if I noticed I was listening to a mind story, it would have been a lot harder to let go of it. And the reason would have been that I really believed that the story was my salvation, right? The story was my salvation. Once I learned that I am safe, I no longer have a belief that a story is my salvation, then all it takes is noticing, oh yeah, I was listening to a story, right? And I can drop it quickly. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time for the noticing to happen. But once the noticing happens, the story can be dropped quickly. So that was my experience with the I am that I am, is it brought in that knowledge. So going on to the next paragraph. And at the same time, so we're still talking about the practice that Inner Ramana is asking me to practice. The first one is the mantra. And then the second one, and at the same time, I ask you to practice surrender. Surrender does not see the mind's problems and solutions as important. It puts aside the mind's stories and listens in the moment for direct communication from me. So this is a correction that you're really observing me choose right here while I'm talking. You know, I had these thoughts. Maybe I'll go get a waitress job, right? Try to get a breakfast shift, right? I had these thoughts. Now I realize I was listening to mind. I'm going to let them go, let the story go, because I know it's not guidance. I know it didn't come from intuition, right? This was mental, and I know that. So I'm going to let it go. I'm going to put aside mind's story and then just listen in the moment for direct communication. Now, you know what's really interesting about that? And in fact, if you have the book, you might even want to underline listens in the moment for direct communication. The mind tells me that I need an answer for October because Danielle's moving out in September. So I need to know now in July how I'm going to be safe in October after Danielle moves out. And then the mind starts making up stories or ideas about how I can be safe in October, right? This says, listen in the moment for direct communication. In other words, right now, I don't need to know about October. Right now, I need to know right now what I am to do. And right now, my guidance is drop that story. Stop thinking about it. It's not important. You know, go back to focusing on your spiritual practice. This is the current guidance. And sometimes people have a little bit of trouble with guidance because they aren't looking for right now what I am to do. They still want guidance to tell them how they're going to be safe in October, right? So we have a difficult time saying, but what's my guidance right now? Just forget about it. Let go of the story. That's my guidance, right? We have a lot of trouble staying with right now. And that's where guidance occurs, is now. So that's what Ramana is reminding us. Practice surrender. Do not pay attention to the mind's problems, the mind's solutions. Just listen to your guidance right this second. And my guidance right this second is drop the story. That's all I need. But if I think I need an answer for October now, I'm not going to be happy with that guidance drop the story. I'm not going to listen to that guidance drop the story, right? So I really need to trust that my current guidance, this moment's guidance, is what's in my best interest and that I am safe and there is never any threat. Continuing with the teachings of Inner Ramana. Through the use of mantra and surrender, the mind becomes a tool that is used. It is no longer a tool that acts as user. Perception is still experienced, but the filter is cleansed of false ideas so that perception is experienced with clarity. This is also called true perception because it is not cluttered with ideas of illusion. Perception is seen and experienced, but truth is realized and remembered so that the one experiencing and communicating through the filter cannot be referred to as deluded. So, you know, sometimes we get this idea, at least in the Course community, that as long as someone is still experiencing themselves in a body, or even more, if I still experience them in a body, then there must be something there that needs healing. This is not what Inner Ramana is saying here at all. Inner Ramana is saying that we can become so clear in what Jesus would have called listening to one voice. We can become so clear that we are experiencing true perception, or what the Course would call the real world. And when we are experiencing true perception or the real world, we are not any longer deluded. So to point fingers at bodies And to say, because that person is in a body, because that person still drives cars, because that person still eats and breathes and pees and poops, there must be something there that needs to be healed, right? This isn't saying the same thing. This is saying that there is a stage of experiencing illusion as illusion that is true perception, and there is no delusion there, because it's not being believed. And I feel, you know, after learning this from Inner Ramana, I feel that the Course teaches the exact same thing. It talks about the real world so near to heaven that it's easy to cross over, right? So that idea that we have that if somebody is still experiencing themselves as human must mean they believe themselves to be human, must mean there's something there that needs to be healed. This is one of those ideas we need to take and throw in the trash can. Because you know what that idea is doing? That idea is keeping us focused on judging other people instead of, as the Course would say, accepting the atonement for myself. It's a distraction idea. And we have no use for distraction ideas. They serve no useful purpose at all. So we can throw it out, as Julie is saying. Absolutely. Throw it out. And what Inner Ramana is saying is if you use these two tools that I'm teaching you, and in fact, as we go through the teachings of Inner Ramana, there'll be some very detailed teaching. If you use these two tools, the mantra and surrender, you will be able to reach this point of true perception, reach this point of not being deluded, even though you will continue to experience life as a human. It reminds me very much of the Buddhist saying, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, right? The difference is I don't believe the illusion. I'm only experiencing the illusion. But now I know who I am, right? That is the difference. And he's saying that these two tools, the mantra and surrender, are going to help. Now, he's also already explained to us why or how the mantra and surrender are going to help. He told us at the very beginning of this first message that the way that the mind is fed, the way that windmill of the mind gets its wind so that it can keep spinning and spinning and spinning, is through our attention. So, for example, if I believe I have a problem, come October, there's not going to be enough money each month. You know, living to paycheck will no longer be the story. It will be less than. I won't have enough. If I believe that story, I start thinking about that story. I start listening to mind's ideas about that story. I'm blowing wind in that windmill, right? But if I accept surrender and mantra, this allows me to quit blowing wind. Because then what happens when I notice the story is rising up in my mind? Yeah, but you are going to need money and you do have to figure this out and this is just the reality. What I can do is I can breathe, notice my heart, and say, I am that I am. And as I focus on I am that I am, at least for me, there's a stillness between the words that I actually hear in a very loud way. I am that I am. As soon as I become focused on that stillness between those words, I am no longer listening to the story. In that moment, I've shifted my attention away from the story to that space, the space between the words, I am that I am, right? Somehow the words focus me on the space. Then when I'm focused on the space, then I realize my guidance now, which may have absolutely nothing to do with making sure I'm safe in October. In fact, most certainly will have nothing to do. It may be return to washing the dishes. Return to what you were doing, washing the dishes, right? That's my current guidance. So by using the mantra and surrender, I'm taking the attention away from the mind, right? I'm placing the attention with the stillness that is present. I'm placing the attention with the intuition. I'm even placing the attention with the experience, but in a different way. When I go back to washing the dishes, I may then be noticing the you know, the warmth of the water. I may be looking out the window and seeing the birds. I'm still noticing the experience, but now I'm noticing the experience as an experience, just like watching that movie in that machine. I'm no longer caught up in the story, right? And again, there's nothing wrong with the experience. It's the believing that this is my life. This is all there is. That's where fear comes from. So the mantra shifts me. Using the language of A Course in Miracles, it shifts me from the wrong mind to the right mind. The mantra is a bridge. You don't want to ask for guidance while you're still in the wrong mind, right? Einstein said you can't solve a problem with the same, I don't know if he said the same mind or at the same level where the problem was created. I don't remember the exact quote, but you can't solve a problem with the mind that created the problem, right? You have to shift. So I notice I'm listening to the story. I am that I am. I shift to the right mind, and then I realize, just drop the story and go back to washing dishes. And that's my guidance. And in that, I take the attention away from the mind. I'm still using the mind. I'm using the mind to know the difference between a plate and a knife. I'm using the mind as I look outside and enjoy the birds singing. But you see the difference in how the mind is being used? It's not being used in what I'm going to call that dangerous storytelling way. You know, Jesus also talks about, you know, mind wandering and how we're much too tolerant of mind wandering, right? That's, you know, that is not dangerous in reality, but it is dangerous in time, right? He uses words like that as well. So this is what is happening with the mantra and surrender. It's shifting me away from that dangerous practice that's not truly dangerous, but it just keeps us stuck in suffering. Yeah, delay is tragic in time. That's the quote. Thank you. It takes my attention away from that part of the mind and shifts it back into something that's more relaxed, something that's more joyful, something that's more trusting, something that's more present, something that's more patient, something that's more joyful, right? It shifts into what the Course would call the right mind. Out of the wrong mind, into the right mind, and then being, existing, abiding there. And when we're being, existing, abiding in the right mind, we are not feeding the wrong mind with our attention. You can't be in both places at the same time. So that is the first message. commentary on mind. And the second message, which came the very next day, is called The Purpose of Surrender. It has both a part one and a part two. Part one came on February 13th, it looks like, and part two came on February 16th. So next week, that's what we'll look at, is we'll look at surrender. Even though we've talked about the purpose a little bit here, we know it's so that we're not thinking with the mind, worrying about, you know, running out of money in October, right? It's so that we return to the moment and listen to this guidance and take our attention away from the mind, right? But we're going to look at that in a lot more detail. So we're going to become a little more aware of how surrender helps us to realize ourself and experience true perception instead of being deluded by illusion. And that's really all I have to say. I'm a couple of minutes early, and I would play a CD or something, except that I don't have my CD player here, and I don't have my iTunes open. By the time I opened it up, the 2 minutes would be gone. So I think, if it's all right with y'all, I'm just going to let go of the mic a little early tonight. So I appreciate being with you, and I will see you next Sunday. I will see you at 10:15 a.m. Eastern Time for the second Awakening Together gathering. And then I will see you at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the next message in the teachings of Inner Ramana. Everyone have a wonderful week. Yeah, see you in church. Bye-bye.